Koji is a venture capital firm cultivating community. This podcast is dedicated to cultivating conversations. Web 3.0 is democratizing the internet, and Koji Conversations is here to democratize access to the founders, investors, and creators building it from the ground up.
Welcome back to Koji Conversations. We're very excited today to be talking to co-founder of TracerDAO, Pat, and head of the Tracer team, Billy. We like to start every episode with an elevator pitch, guys. So welcome to the podcast and bring us up to date on TracerDAO V2.
Sure. So just starting with Tracer. Tracer is a smart contract protocol for derivatives. So we focused in on providing a suite of tools for people within DeFi and more broadly as the infrastructure expands into the real world, really effective risk management tools to be able to hedge out risks that exist on their balance sheet, as well as effectively take risk on underlying positions should they choose to do so. With V2, right now we've got Perpetual Pools V1 launched, which has seen about $375 million worth of volume. We've had up to about $50 million of total value locked up in these contracts. Tokenized leverage positions, which can be traded on a variety of different DEXs, then natively launched on Arbitrum. So leading up to V2, we've got some killer features that are going to be launched within Tracer. One of those is permissionless deployment, which I'd love to touch on in a bit more detail at some point later on in the podcast. One of those is a zero, effectively minimum commitment size, which means that any user with any amount of capital can come in and mint a leveraged long or short position using the Tracer perpetual pools contracts. And then the third feature that we're really, really excited to have featured within the V2 launch is we've absolutely reduced any of the decay that was being experienced by these leveraged tokens. So we'll now be able to hold them over a much longer term, either within smart contracts or within a wallet over time. So what that means is that you can purchase, let's say, a 3x Bitcoin token, a long token, and then hold that in your MetaMask or hold that in your Ledger for maybe up to a year or two time.
Yeah, it sounds like a pretty incredible missing piece for a lot of the DeFi puzzle for many users. Let's dive further into volatility decay and how you guys plan to tackle it to make sure you're incentivizing those long-term positions.
Yeah, sure. So in V1 of the protocol, as token holders held positions for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and longer, they started to see an erosion in their position value. And as a result, you know, it really just wasn't a long-term holdable product. And so as people wanted to get access to long-term leverage exposure, we needed to make changes into how the products function. And so some of the things we've introduced is taking a simple moving average of the price of the underlying. And when doing that, we actually can reduce volatility decay in some of the simulations that we saw, you know, up to 75%. So, you know, we're still seeing a minimum of volatility decay by introducing the SMA, but then we've introduced another mechanism in adding a minting fee and distributing that to all the pool token holders entering into the pool and distributing those fees to pool token holders in a way that can actually take that volatility decay to near zero. And now in doing that, we're allowing people to actually hold positions for, you know, up to years in this case.
Yeah, I don't want to be like the dumbest person in the room, but I will be. What is volatility decay? And like, what's the trade-off with volatility decay, really?
Sure. So effectively, volatility decay is when, you know, you're utilizing leverage in particular, as you, you know, have a 1% increase in the underlying. You know, you have a price of an asset that's one, now goes from 100 to 101. So you have a 1% increase. If you were to reduce by another 1%, you're not going back to 100. And so you have a little bit of decay in there in the underlying value between the long and the short holders. And so if you keep having volatility like that, ultimately the collateral supporting your position will erode to ultimately zero over time.
Interesting. Okay. So it's like the longer that I'm in a position and the more exposed I am to volatility, the more my collateral will naturally depreciate over time. And that's sort of the trade-off for no liquidations.
Yeah, and it's a phenomenon that is experienced in leveraged ETF products in the traditional financial space,
right.
Which have been communicated as short-term products, and they're leveraging the spot reference price to rebalance these products. And in that sense, a lot of the proprietary trading firms and traders of these leveraged ETF products trade them as short-term products.
Gotcha.
But within DeFi, what we've done in order to make these leveraged tokens more accessible over the longer term and be able to be traded with indexes and leveraged for different loans on whether it be RARI or Aave, we've effectively enabled a whole new way to utilize the collateral that's sitting in a leveraged position.
And you get that same sort of utility, but now with V2, it's with 75% or about there, less volatility decay than V1.
That's right.
Yeah. So introducing this simple moving average, we're able to see roughly a 70-75% decrease, but then also introducing this minting fee mechanism and distributing that fee to the pool holders, we're able to take it even lower.
So you're looking to have a fee mechanism and then distribute rewards back to people holding those pool positions.
That's right. So the fee will actually be distributed to the pool token holders.
Okay. So that's basically sort of like counteracting any negative effects that someone might have via volatility decay.
That's right.
Yeah. And further incentivizing those long-term holders. So guys, just broadening the scope a little bit, what were kind of the biggest takeaways from your V1 launch, maybe aside from volatility decay?
Yeah, in my mind, it was the impact of imbalances between the long and short side of the pools. And effectively, what we call the skew being out of balance, and the importance of actually maintaining a level balance between the long and short sides of the pools. And with the impact that it has there is what the actual performance of the product has. So if I'm taking a long view on ETH and the pool size that, you know, there's $10 million of collateral on the long side and only $5 million of collateral on the short side, you know, as we do value transfers from the long and short side of the pool, if there's an imbalance, the people that are on the long side aren't getting the effective leverage that they think they are when they enter into a position. And so what we're doing now is we're actually instituting mechanisms like vaults that will make it super easy for users to actually farm that skew to bring the pools, the long and short side of the pools in balance, so that when people are taking a particular view of long or short, it's actually following the performance that's stated within the effective leverage of the product.
Yeah, interesting. And you guys launched in September last year. So compared to maybe where the market's at now, would have been viewed as a bull market. Have you seen like the users change their position holdings reflecting that?
We've seen a lot more swing trading from particular users to kind of take advantage of the underlying movements in the marketplace. And it's actually interesting, you know, some people are seeing that there's actually a lag within how, you know, if the market goes down, people tend to, you know, take longer to move from the short side of the pool to the long side of the pool. So swing traders have actually seen some interesting opportunities to kind of capture, you know, that movement in collateral shifting from the long to the short or vice versa, kind of before, you know, just kind of taking advantage of market moves. So it's kind of like having like a little bit of a cheat code, at least how it's been performing for certain people over the past couple of weeks.
I love that. Yeah, the skew farming is really interesting. So you've basically built out a structured product on top of the tracer pools, one to allow people to gain access of sort of this opportunity that sort of is stirred from the fact of, I guess, like inefficient allocation of resources by the people participating in the pools.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a laborious exercise to farm the skew and do the trading manually. So just making it super simple for people to be able to execute professional trading strategies like cash and carry. It just makes life much more easier for our users and makes the product perform much better.
Yeah, that's something that I've definitely noticed with Tracer, like throughout sort of the course of Tracer, is a very heavy focus on the user experience. One, the website is honestly incredible. It's one of the best websites I've actually ever seen in DeFi. And then two, you guys are built on top of Arbitrum, which is sort of targeting, you know, lower gas fees. So it widens the breadth of individuals that are actually able to participate within DeFi. How about we just chat about Arbitrum for a bit? You guys have been one of the first projects there. Like, what are your thoughts on Arbitrum? What do you think about L2 22?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think right at the start of Arbitrum, we were one of the first protocols to actually deploy, which came with a few growing pains there at the start. I think with all of the hype around L2s, the optimism versus Arbitrum versus sort of Starkware at that point debate, yeah, there was definitely teething issues with respect to getting onto the network and experiencing full uptime when connecting to the network. The bridging experience at the start wasn't awesome for people.
Yeah, I remember so that.
It was a bit scary.
Yeah. So I think that was very similar to early Ethereum as well, yeah, when a lot of the tools weren't built out to sort of natively connect to a lot of the apps. But since then, the experience has gotten a lot better for users. The Arbitrum bridge, you can now natively port over to Arbitrum through Tracer. The connectivity has gotten a lot better on that front, and users are getting much more comfortable and familiar with connecting and bridging across L1s and L2s. I think there's still quite a long way to go on the front of the user experience. And the ecosystem tooling of actually moving across across chain or across different bridges. But I think, yeah, again, over time, there will ideally be a much better solution for this, such that the user isn't horrified by the experience and having to select between five or six different bridge type protocols, yeah, where it's quite daunting to understand the inner workings to a degree. But yeah, since deploying in September there on Arbitrum, we've slowly seen a lot of great protocols move over, which has attracted a lot more native capital over to Arbitrum and begets liquidity in many senses there too. So you've got an ecosystem of lending, an ecosystem of exchange, a fair few derivatives projects that have launched on Arbitrum. So you're really starting to see quite a vibrant ecosystem emerge within the DeFi landscape, which certainly puts us in a great position to help manage some of the risk that exists within the Arbitrum ecosystem there, as well as obviously attract users that are looking to take on their beliefs and mint a 3x long or short.
100%. I do. It's interesting building straight into sort of this L2 ecosystem. And I remember when you guys first took the deployment onto Arbitrum, yeah, it was at a time when there was really nothing being deployed. I think also at the time, Optimism wasn't working. So it was a bit risk on, but it definitely seemed like the right move, ideologically at least, to allow people to participate. And I guess the next natural question is Arbitrum going to be sort of the final home for Tracer Finance, or is there, you know, looking across to different sort of chains as well, maybe Avalanche, Phantom, is a multi-chain future sort of in the pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're not ideologically beholden to any chain necessarily. When we're looking to provide Tracer contracts to users, we think about a few things. So we think about the underlying security. What are the security guarantees that we can provide users so that they know that their funds are safe when they're self-custodying them or being custodied within the Tracer smart contract? So that's obviously one key component. Scalability is definitely one of those components as well. So obviously ETH L1 really doesn't provide right now the support that a lot of DeFi applications need with respect to the very fast clearing. This is what traditional financial traders are extremely used to, and the DeFi ecosystem has to move there. So you're going to see more and more of these roll-ups to the point of L2, 22 with much more instantaneous clearing throughout the year, much, much cheaper fees, which is just going to keep on pushing DeFi and pushing the DeFi experience much closer to the mainstream, such that people can really instantly trade and rely on these contracts for, in the same way they rely on some of the traditional financial trading tools, which is great. So yeah, with security and scalability, that's a key piece, but also there's tooling that does need to exist within the ecosystem. And again, touching on that point of the experience of getting there, we need to make sure that users aren't lost on the journey. And I think whether that's Arbitrum, where we're not 100% sure, we're really happy with the experience in Arbitrum so far as the ecosystem continues to grow. But certainly as the ecosystem evolves, we'll make the decision to deploy on other chains or support other chains, should that be the best substrate for the Tracer contracts.
As for the scalability of TracerDAO specifically, I know a big feature of V2 will be permissionless deployment. So essentially, you know, your smart contracts are designed that any user can essentially plug and play and set up a market they wish to gain exposure to. Why for your team is permissionless deployment so important?
Yeah, definitely. So when we incepted Tracer, we always had the vision of just creating the infrastructure. And then if anyone has a price feed, if anyone has an oracle, whether that be the price of carbon, whether that be maybe the weather in Chicago, or whether that be a CryptoPunk index, let's plug in the price and let's instantly create a market such that people can trade on it. In the traditional financial space, markets are relatively difficult to set up with a fairly high transaction cost. So there's not a great deal of experimentation that goes on. But within perpetuals and within DeFi and with really cheap Oracle technology, we've now got the ability to witness this Cambrian explosion of markets that really hasn't been accessible before for many people. The idea of permissionless deployment and giving people the tools to create markets to manage, whether it be localized community risk against the weather or against localized grain prices or against localized commodities or whether it be a macroeconomic indicator of the Australian GDP or American GDP. We want to enable people to deploy those markets such that any of the risk that they do incur on a day-to-day or throughout the years, they have a way of managing that through a derivative position. So that's why permissionless deployment's important to me and important to a few of the people within Tracer. But Billy, maybe you could add a bit more to that as to why it's important to you.
Yeah, sure. So back in the day, I actually set up exchanges and marketplaces working in TradFi. And at one point in time, I was actually leading up an exchange for natural catastrophe insurance, like earthquake and hurricane insurance. And we were having great success. And then our company was sold to ICE, the big exchange operator. And ultimately, it was the end of the great financial crisis. And basically, the executive team at ICE said, you know, we don't want to do anything new, weird, and different. And this was like a, you know, tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollar marketplace where transactional costs are, you know, 1-2% each time someone were to trade. And we were building infrastructure to make it cheap, easy, and affordable for people to manage earthquake and hurricane related risk. And basically, you know, the legacy system kind of let consumers down, basically, by having this stringent authoritarian type view on what people can actually have access to. And so creating the Tracer infrastructure, you know, we're allowing our markets and our interfaces to potentially deploy markets, but really anyone can build on top of us to deploy markets that are, you know, impactful to them or their communities.
So I want to understand just really quickly, when I'm deploying a market, like what are sort of the key features? So it's obviously like the price feed and, you know, that goes into exactly what you guys were saying about even using metrics that, you know, are actually like applicable in the real world, the amount of water if I'm running a farm or something like that. But then there's also sort of like this collateral type as well. Do you get to pick and choose the collateral type and the price feed that you're using, or is it sort of the collateral type is permissioned and you can only select from a few, and then the price feed is permissionless?
No, so for V2, it's any underlying ERC-20 can be used as collateral. So in the same way of just the simple market creation on Uniswap, for example, if you can just specify two ERC-20s in the Uniswap case. But with Tracer, it's just an Oracle price feed and underlying collateral, and you've got your derivatives market, which is incredibly powerful.
Cool. And I guess the next question is, is there any risk in having like a highly volatile collateral type? Or
definitely, if you've got a rebasing coin or an ERC-20 with some fairly funky mechanisms going on in the background, yeah. Your derivatives market is not going to behave the way in which your standard USDC or DAI or FAI market will work. So yeah, there's going to be a fair bit of experimentation, we're sure. And it's just making sure that this is communicated to users that engage in these markets.
Gotcha. Are you expecting to see some really novel collateral types, maybe like vault positions, for example?
I think potentially in a couple of years, those types of markets might continue to continue to emerge as there's more liquidity. But I think that at least at the beginning, I don't expect to see too much volume with obscure collateral or obscure market types. It's just a difficult product for not only traders to understand, but then also market makers to hedge out and ensure that there's sort of deep books and deep volume for people to trade into.
I think the power of permissionless deployment is that you're going to see some wild and wacky use cases emerge. And one that you guys are going to launch with, and you teased earlier, Pat, will be the NFT indices, which I think is pretty powerful technology to allow for punks, people who are priced out of blue chip NFTs but want exposure to manage their risk or experience the upside that other people are benefiting from.
Definitely. Yeah, this is something we're really, really excited about. And again, touches on the power that some derivative contracts have, right? If you can't gain exposure by buying the underlying stock or commodity or cryptocurrency or whatever asset it be, derivatives are a really, really powerful tool to gain that exposure. So in leading up to V2 and not soon after, we're going to be launching a CryptoPunk index, which we announced last week, which we be able to be traded within the pool contracts. So yeah, it's definitely wild.
I love it.
What we're going to see.
Are we going 3x punks, like 3x longs? Is that going to be available? Or
we're hoping we can jack it up to 10x.
Oh my god.
We'll see how the product performs. We're very confident that that we are going to have something really solid there. But yeah, what it'll enable is for you to mint a 3x long or short position on the index of all CryptoPunks, and then be able to trade that on your favorite DEX such as Balancer or Uniswap, or even just hold that within your wallet. And again, yep, You'll be able to mint, let's say, $100 worth of value of these punk tokens.
That's cool.
Rather than having to purchase outright a CryptoPunk, which we all know isn't the cheapest of assets.
Yeah, and it's also like, I mean, just to touch on the non-degen side of this all, if I'm holding a CryptoPunk, for example, and I'm a bit skeptical about the price, maybe NFTs have just gone for a massive run or ETH is starting to explode upwards, you can also take a position short to hedge out some of the risk. So you can still own your punk, but be less exposed to sort of the price volatility of punks.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have this emotional attachment to their punks, and it's like, you know, separating themselves from it is difficult. And so we give them a mechanism where they can effectively manage that risk in a capital efficient way and be a long-term holder of something that's kind of near and dear to them.
I like that, sort of like retain identity but minimize risk.
Yeah, retain the status of owning the punk. That's it.
And I think another thing you also just touched on was that I could get exposure with $100, which I previously wouldn't have been able to do with V1. So the removal of commit sizes is going to open you up to a whole new raft of smaller market participants. Why was that really essential to the V2 launch?
Yeah, well, I think with V1, we had a minimum commit size of $1,000 just due to some of the mechanisms within the perpetual pool smart contracts. It made it a bit difficult to mint the smaller size positions with respect to gas fees within the contracts and a few other pieces. But yeah, with V2, it's obviously extremely important for people that don't have that $1,000 of capital, or they don't want to risk $1,000 of capital in initially just trying out the contracts. So with very little capital now, anybody can come in and try out the contracts, mint their beliefs and experience the beauty of the perpetual pool tokens.
Love it. And we've spoken about V2. Let's go a bit more drastic and think about sort of the 5-10 year timeline. Are you guys still going to be working on Tracer? And if so, what's the roadmap looking like?
Yeah, 5-10 year timeline. I think it's impossible to know what's happening next week within DeFi and which market participants are going to be successful. But
yeah,
certainly in that timeline, we'd love to still be around, and we'll be focusing pretty hard on building out the Tracer vision, which is providing a derivative substrate, a neutral derivative substrate that people can connect to to manage that risk. So later in the year, beyond perpetual pools, we'll be launching a perpetual swap product, which we're really excited about. Obviously, the perpetual swap market is an extremely competitive market, but there's definitely still a lot of room and a lot more of a user-friendly experience that can be delivered to people that within DeFi. There's a lot of markets as well that currently don't exist on the perpetual swap front that can be created and bringing in a lot of the DeFi communities to trade with leverage and to manage their risk on some of those specific DeFi native coins or metaverse related, NFT related coins. There's a lot of communities that are looking to manage some of that risk. So yeah, the roadmap with Tracer is certainly a long one. And we certainly hope to continue to work closer to that vision of serving the everyday person with really, really meaningful risk management tools. And what we mean by that and what we've spoken about in the past is, let's say, being able to serve up to an Uber driver or someone or a truck driver or someone that consistently expends fuel, even just the everyday man, a way to manage that fuel price risk. So rather than within Australia, at least at the moment, you're seeing fuel prices change from about $1.90 a litre to, let's say, $1.50 a litre the next day. And it's extremely, extremely frustrating, to me at least, that this exists and we don't have a reliable way to just lock in a fixed fuel price. So that's something that derivatives are incredible for. And that's something that with Tracer and with the lower transaction cost experience within DeFi and the accessibility of all of this technology, the programmability can provide. So we'll be working close to that future of delivering these once somewhat gate-kept contracts or at least highly licensed derivative contracts to everyday people and serve that up in a way that they can understand and that makes sense.
Yeah, to add on top of that, you know, we're deploying a factory model, so we can, you know, anyone can access that factory model and deploy new financial products through the Tracer factory. So if a team is looking to develop an options product, they can create an options template, put that into the data factory, and then we can create option products off of that using price feeds and Oracle feeds. And then even further than that, we're developing what we're calling a data factory model, which basically would allow anyone to combine any Oracle price feeds, weight them in certain ways, and create custom indices as well. So if you're a DAO treasury, you can effectively replicate the DAO's treasury using our Oracle price feeds and the weights that you have within the DAO treasury of those assets, and then create risk management tools through the Tracer protocol to help you manage the risk of your treasury, for example.
Democratizing derivatives. We love it. For all of our listeners out there, how can we get involved with Tracer DAO? Do you guys have any parting comments or how we can reach the community?
Definitely. You can follow us on Twitter at Tracer DAO, or just jump into the Discord and get involved within the community and start contributing. There's a lot of work to be done in leading up to V2, whether that be in communicating, whether that be in developing content, whether that be in developing out some of the interfaces. There's a lot of contribution to be done. So please get involved. We're happy to chat and support you to get involved within the Tracer DAO. But other than that, Billy, have you got anything to add?
No, just feel free to hit me up in Discord as Squelch. And happy to help, you know, answer any questions and get you contributing in a meaningful way to the DAO.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on Koji Conversations, guys. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining this Koji Conversation. To continue the conversation offline, DM us on Twitter at @Koji_capital or reach out to us via email, hello@Koji.capital, or jump into our Discord linked in our bio.